The sacred doctrine and the literature associated with it gives us a septenary constitution of man, which I may give in the following form, proceeding from the outermost to the innermost. A linga sharira, or astral body. Above it, the principle of life, which is called prana, and is carried in the vehicle known as the linga sharira. Then there is what is known as kama rupa, or desire vehicle. Then kama manas, or desire led mind. Then higher manas, and finally buddhi. And above these, but not a principle, is the Atman, which Shankara has said is the status of the Brahman in creatures. But there is also given in the secret doctrine another division that is also very helpful. It is the division known as that produced by Taraka Yoga, where with the Atman standing above, we have the Karana Sharira, or Buddhi. Then below that, Sukshma Karira, which consists of the mental principle. And finally, Stula Karira, which corresponds to the outer physical or animal nature. This system has some particular values. It is said, for instance, that an adept can divide himself into three parts and function in all three parts on different levels at the same time. He could not divide himself into seven parts without killing himself. We have then in this threefold division three aspects which I find very helpful. The animal nature below, the monastic or essentially man nature, the word man being considered as an equivalent of the word M-A-R-N in Sanskrit, meaning think. And then above that, the spiritual aspect of man, identical with buddhi. We have thus a fundamental threefold nature. And the monastic part, or the mental part, is called the intermediate part. In this connection, I would like to remind you of the story given in the so-called third volume of the third edition of the Secret Doctrine concerning the mystery of Buddha, where it is stated that the intermediate principle or the monastic principle of the Buddha replaced the intermediate principle of Shankara during the first 33 years of Shankara's life, the period in which he did his work. So the intermediate principle has a particular value in a technical way. No doubt, the highest or spiritual portion of man, the Bodhi nature, is supreme. But in this humanity at this time, the development that we know consists of the lower animal or sensuous part, the intellectual part, with the higher or spiritual part quiescent and not active. Most human beings, it would seem, center their interest in the lower aspect, the animalistic, the sensualistic aspect of mind, of their nature. A few center their interest in the intellectual or monastic aspect, but only very rarely is the center of gravity centered in the highest or spiritual aspect. There's an interesting correspondence here between this formulation and that which is given by Morris Buck in his work Cosmic Consciousness. He differentiates there in a threefold form also, namely the simple consciousness of the animal, the self-conscious consciousness of the man, and cosmic consciousness, which corresponds to that which happens when enlightenment comes. And he also found very, very few who were highly developed on the highest level. The vast majority of human beings centering their interests in that field which we may call animalistic or simple consciousness, though they still have the intellectual capacity to deal with it, but use the intellectual capacity only in an instrumental sense. Here, a word might be said of correlating our thought with certain objective philosophies of an exoteric form. This philosophy is that known as pragmatism. It differentiates between the sensuous and the intellectual or conceptual, and it treats the intellectual or conceptual as only instrumental to results on the level of the sensuous being. I can fairly well quote a statement of William James in this connection, and it is to this effect: pragmatism teaches that the whole meaning of the concept consists in experiences to be expected, or conduct to be recommended, that the conceptual does not present value in of itself, but is only instrumental. This is a downward turning in orientation. I might here refer to an experience of my own that definitely gives more than an instrumental value to the intermediate or conceptual principle. I majored in my academic years primarily in pure mathematics, and there were times when I entered in to a sort of numinous state of consciousness when delving deeply into this conceptual material. I have never had that sort of consciousness correlated with the sensuous field. I therefore insist that under some conditions the conceptual can bring to one a truly terminal value in a numinous experience or empirics. I therefore take exception to the word whole in William James' statement. No doubt, most of the use of the intellect or the conceptual power is instrumental. But I insist it is not true that the whole meaning of the concept is to be found in experiences to be expected or conduct to be recommended. I know too that it can be the means whereby one can attain to an enlightened consciousness that transcends the intellect. The trouble with the pragmatic statement lies in the use of the word whole, the whole meaning, that I challenge as definitely not true. There is a quotation in the Secret Doctrine which reveals in graphic form the significance of this contribution from the Manasaputra. This quotation is on page 242, volume 2 of the first edition. Incarnate the spiritual monad of a Newton, grafted on that of the greatest mind, on that of the greatest saint on earth, in a physical body the most perfect you can think of, namely in a two or even a three principled body composed of its stula sharira, prana or life principle, and linga sharira or astral body. And if it lacks its middle and fifth principles, these are the mental principles, you will have created an idiot at best a beautiful, soulless, empty, and unconscious appearance. Cogito ergo sum can find no room in the brain of such a creature, not on this plane, at any rate. And I have already noted in an earlier part of this tape the suggestion that the myth of Lucifer and of Prometheus and finally of the fallen angels, which has been carried down in our literature, is a reference to the fall of the Manasaputra and their superimposition upon a substantial portion of the human race. There has been historically a misinterpretation of Lucifer. The story that we are familiar with and which is referred to in the Old Testament of the Christian and Jewish Bible was known as Venus. In fact, the name of Venus in the when it was the morning star was Lucifer, not when Venus was an evening star. And the significance of Lucifer is to be found in the words, bringer of light, for the sun followed Venus when it was the morning star. But there's the story of the fall of Lucifer, and this is referred to in Isaiah. And as Isaiah interprets it, Lucifer became the satanic principle. As the incarnation of the Manasaputra is interpreted in the secret doctrine, that they are anything but satanic. They are the principle that raises man so that in some respects he is the equal of the gods. There is here an interesting question. How does it happen that a principle that was so benign in its effect in reality should be interpreted as an evil principle? And this confusion exists to this day, for one can find references in the psychology of Dr. Carl G. Jung in which he refers to the intellect as the devil, as the evil principle. And the question is, why? I think I have an answer to this, and I will illustrate it by a kind of event which one can experience in his travels over nature. Turn over a rock partially embedded in the earth. Oftentimes, one will find under that rock a number of insects or insect-like creatures, and even among them, the scorpions and centipedes. These creatures will be disturbed as soon as the light strikes them, and they will scurry hunting for some other dark place. Now, judging by their behavior, the light experience, which was affected by the turning over of the stone, was unpleasant to these creatures. They found it painful, even inimical. And if they had the power to think, they might indeed have called this light satanic. And I think that is illustrates the point that for primitive man, for the ape-like creature, the sensuous being, who loved to wallow in his sensuous state, the bringing of the conceptual principle in to him, which would bring in another power that would disturb his wallowing in pure sensuality, could be regarded as evil. Where in point of fact, it was a bringing of a real light, something highly superior to that which the earth-like, the ape-like creatures had. They could no longer wallow in their sensuality with the contentment that they had heretofore. So, therefore, this was a painful experience. Although, it was the bringing down of a higher power. Lucifer is the bringer of light. Now, it is true that the principle of the intellect can function both in a positive and a negative way. It is a two-edged power. But that is a fact very different from that implied by the statement that essentially the intellect is an evil power. What it is essentially is a power of a higher order, capable of affecting both a superior good and a kind of evil. But in its own nature, it lifts man up to something more akin to a godlike nature than that of the ape-like creature had possessed before that time. To complete the picture, I shall introduce a series of quotations from The Secret Doctrine without specific comment. Thus, for instance, second volume, first edition, page 162. Lucifer is the spirit of intellectual enlightenment and freedom of thought. And then third edition, page 248, volume 2, in footnote. Allegory of Fire of Prometheus is another version of the rebellion of the proud Lucifer. Third edition also, page 539, volume 2. But in antiquity and reality, Lucifer, or Luciferus, is the name of the angelic entity presiding over the light of truth as over the light of day. And on page 248, footnote, Volume 2, 3rd edition. The allegory of the fire of Prometheus is another version of the rebellion of the proud Lucifer. Also, Volume 1, page 485, 3rd edition. Man proceeds from the Dion Choan and is a fallen angel, a god in exile. Further, 182, 1st edition, volume 1. It is the Manasseh Dianis who fill up the gap, and they represent the evolutionary power of intelligence and mind, the link between spirit and matter in this round. And that should complete the picture. In other words, we have here in ourselves a twofold evolution. One of the outer being, which has evolved through a lengthy process on the order of billions of years, and has resulted in what is called an ape-like creature, but not an ape. It had the sensuous powers that are common to the animals that we, higher animals that we know today, but they did not have an intellect. Then there was the superimposition upon this proto-human entity of a quality from the fallen Manasaputra. And from that we achieve our mental capacity, that which is known as the intermediate principle. We are not, in that case, a simple evolution throughout time of one being, one kind of being, but a double evolution. Now, it has been pointed out in the Secret Doctrine that this is not a case of two monads developing in one body, but rather of an essence projected from the Manasaputra. Now, there's a question in my mind. It is also indicated in the Secret Doctrine that ultimately the Manasaputra will return to their normal state. In that case, what happens to the mental principle in this human race of which we are a part? My guess is that the power projected will remain as a positive power with us after the withdrawal of the principle by the Manasaputra. In other words, it will be induced into our nature and will belong to us in our own right. I attach a very high importance to this principle. It is the power whereby we have achieved the culture that we have today. No doubt with all of its problems, but also with its potentialities and actual developments of a positive sort. Without this principle, we would be no more than, at best, spiritual animals, if you please. A spiritual nature above, an animal nature below, but no conscious linkage between. The power principle rests in the mind, so far as this plane of being is concerned. We are responsible entities just because we are intellectual entities. We have to be responsible for our mistakes, but we are also recipients of the advantages which come from our positive achievements. We are factors to be reckoned with, for good or ill, not merely weak entities subject to the laws of nature, but entities that can choose and decide either wisely and nobly or otherwise. But essentially responsible, and therefore this produces a worthwhile existence.